This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Many people are expanding their efforts and increasing their produce production as they realize the health and financial benefits of growing their own food. And some are even thinking about becoming self-sufficient or farming to generate an income. The Campbell County Extension Office is presenting a series of programs for anyone thinking about living a more self-sufficient lifestyle or boosting production and profits with an existing farm. Joining us to discuss homesteading and farming and to answer your gardening questions are Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm, and from the Campbell County Extension Office, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Don, Sarah, and Melinda, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
So, Sarah, what exactly is homesteading? What are we talking about?
Well, really, you know, trying to get back to our land. Maybe you want to live off your land and being self-sufficient. You know, just being a farmer and having yourself and your family just growing and surviving or thriving off that land.
Don, you get a lot of questions about this at the Extension Office?
We sure do. I logged in the past 6 months and have approaching 22 calls that just come in randomly before this program is even publicized. And these folks are asking about help. You know, they acquire land or they have family farm or land situation that all of a sudden they take control over. So, yes, we get a good number of these calls and they're asking for help in developing and the ideas of how they can utilize their newfound capital land projects and stuff.
And Melinda, what about at Turner Farm? Is this something you frequently get questions about?
Yes, we do. Usually it's people who've gotten land and want to they're looking for someone to help them, and they're seeing if we can link them up with someone that can help them do the farming or gardening.
So what are the benefits of this? You're moving towards self-sufficiency. What's good about doing this, Sarah?
You know, a lot of farmers that I work with, and Don, you can chime in as well, you know, farming is not their, you know, primary job or their source of income. So as we say it, they're farmers by night, and they have another job by day. And so they're getting into farming, or maybe they once grew up in the farming family, and they want to give back to the land or get back to the land. So this is an opportunity for folks to learn how to get back and possibly, you know, sell produce and offset some dollars for their families.
So what's the first advice that you give to someone who comes into land? Don, what kind of advice you give them to help them decide if they should farm it or if they should rent it out or what they should do with it?
Well, one of the things they often will say is, you know, we've got land, and one of the first questions will say, we have no idea how to utilize it. So when I began to talk to them, I talked to them about their interests, their past knowledge. We really began to look at their land resources there, from soil type to topography to water resources. And we began to sort of put a puzzle together about what they're interested in. And how does the land, can be utilized? And so we began to sort of build a plan for them. And sometimes this may take a few sessions or maybe a period of a year or two working with them to finalize what they feel like is something they're very comfortable with. And this plan can change, obviously, as time goes on. Then sometimes we get calls with young farmers taking over their parents' farm, or these may be young folks that are buying land to farm it. So, and that's a little bit different. We try to teach them about the management and the economics and the budgeting of farming as well. So these are two different types of classes.
Now, how realistic is it that that people can make a living from doing this?
When you're looking at, you know, from the agriculture and horticultural standpoint, you know, it really comes back to the resources people have, and I'm looking at more land resources here and the opportunities often to add value to those resources and to grow plants and animals A lot of time it's niche farming where they have something that would be of higher value that they might sell to the general public. And, you know, in some cases, if they have enough land and enough market for their product, you know, there's been situations where we had people that quit their day job, so to speak, and went into the niche farming or farming in general. But it's not easy to do. You've got to be a shrewd business person. You've got to understand your goals and objectives, and these programs will help you do that.
I'd have to think that you need a business plan going into this.
Yeah, that's one of the things that the Farm Start program will do very quickly. When we begin to analyze the natural resources of the land, we'll obviously begin to say, okay, based on your resource and your interest, you really need to come up with a business plan, and we'll walk folks through that business plan during the course of these nine sessions with Farm Start.
Melinda, what kind of advice do you give to people who are coming in thinking about either homesteading or they're thinking about starting a farm? What do you usually tell them?
Well, I guess it just depends on what they're asking. But we at Turner Farm are really open to people coming to the farm, looking around the farm. Our farm is open Monday through Saturday, and people can walk around on the farm. They can walk through the fields. They can look at anything. I had a woman one time that wasn't quite sure how to harvest her lettuce. So I told her when we were going to be harvesting lettuce and said, come on out. So we're just really open to people coming, and people do kind of treat Turner Farm like a park, and they'll park their cars and get their babies out of the car and the strollers and walk up and down the driveways. And so I think that's a really great resource. Like, people can see. I know some crops that I had never seen growing. It took me two or three times to figure out how to grow them. So, you know, maybe even just seeing a crop growing might help you with your crops. And we're just there for people. And we do offer classes. If you watch our website, we have different classes, usually in the wintertime, usually in January or February. We'll have classes about gardening, and that's for backyard gardeners. So just depends on what people are interested in. And we do have a wonderful man in our livestock program, that Danny, that's really great if they have animal questions, and a lot of people do, and I'm sure he'd be happy to talk to people about getting started in animals because he's so passionate about it.
What were some of the, could you give me some examples of some of the crops you were talking about when you said you have to see them grow first before you can really understand them?
Well, I had trouble with kohlrabi, and I'm not sure.
Kohlrabi.
Kohlrabi, and I don't know if I'd ever even seen it before my boss said she wanted me to grow kohlrabi, and it just, I don't know. I failed a couple times, and now I look back on it, I don't know why I had trouble with it. But, you know, I'd never even seen it, so it was weird.
I've never even heard of it, so what is it?
It's in the brassica family, so it's related to broccoli, and it gets this, so basically you grow it pretty much like broccoli, and in the field, it gets this round kind of bulb-like thing just above the soil surface, and all the leaves come out of it, and so I always say it looks a little bit like Sputnik, and they come in, you can get them in light green or purple. And don't have any trouble with it right now, but I did. And then there's another one. I had trouble growing and still really haven't succeeded at broccoli rabe, which is a green that has like a tiny, tiny little broccoli florette on it. But you really eat it for the greens. But I've just given up on that. And I don't think it's difficult to grow. It's just like I don't keep a close enough eye on it and didn't catch it in time when you're supposed to cut it and eat it. So, yeah.
You ever have anybody come in after they see that process you're talking about of studying the crop, say, no, I changed my mind. This is too much work.
We probably have. Yeah, we've probably had people decide it was too much work. Yeah.
513-419-7100. If you have any questions about gardening or questions about homesteading and starting a farm, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Don, are there federal and state programs to offer money or inexpensive loans to encourage farming certain types of crops?
There is. Once part of these programs will be to look closely at, you know, funding sources, you know, identifying the opportunities to get help. You know, there's some of the USDA and Natural Resource Conservation Service, even Extension has some levels of potential funding there for farmers. So there is, and that's part of our program, is to work with people on that. Some of these are grants. Some of this is cost share, where you put up so much equity and they help fund the other half in some cases. And then there's low interest loans for beginning farmers as well. So we'll talk about those and give folks an idea of what the opportunities are out there.
Sarah, is there a crop that would be considered easier and cheaper to grow for someone who just wants to give it a try without killing themselves or going into debt?
Yeah, majority of our cool season crops like lettuce and snow peas and carrots would be fairly simple to grow. I'd also think thinking about what you and your family enjoy to eat majority of the time, so there's no wasted product, and you first learn the science behind those and then possibly expand your farming operation. So, you know, sometimes we get the calls, oh, I have some land or I want to grow all these vegetables, and then they decide to go on vacation or leave, and then they realize their crops have declined. And so I think that with that said, I think you need to start small and really understand what you and your family need to eat and what the niche market is, I guess, if you do decide to sell commercially, either to a CSA or a farm market or farm stand or even to restaurants for that matter.
What size are we talking about? We're talking about how much space do you need? Huge farm? Can you start with just a little bit of land? Or
actually, I had a lady that called about these programs with only, she said, I may not have enough land. And she said, I only have 1 acre of available land other than my house and lawn area. And I said, well, it is small, but in reality, you can take an acre and if you develop it correctly, and part of this program is giving you the ideas how to develop this. And from a fruit and vegetable standpoint, it would be amazing what you can grow on a plot of land as small as an acre. And that not only would take care of your family, maybe extended family, and maybe have a little bit left over to go ahead and sell at farmers markets or your local, you know, own personal stand you might develop. So, you know, you don't need a large plot of land. A lot of times it's just how valuable that single plot might be, the soil resources it might have, and availability of water to utilize. So, you know, you don't need a big tract of land to actually produce, you know, quality produce or quality agricultural products for yourself.
Yeah, and in fact, I read about somebody who was starting a small market garden, and they started, I think they said they started with 300 square feet. That was their first year. But then pretty soon the next year they were up to 3,000 square feet. And not long after that, they were up to 6,000 square feet. So they took that kind of slow growth approach, try it a little bit at a time, grow it. Is that a good tactic for getting into this?
Yeah, from a novice standpoint, and the homesteading is sort of for novice people with not a lot of history of working the land and planting or growing type crops. So, yeah. Starting small is always encouraged, because if you start small and you're successful at growing a small crop, then you can expand and it's really, you build on success. If you start out, you know, too big and you have failures, then you're often, you know, not going to come back to that. So we encourage people to shop around, look at what other people are doing. You know, we do a lot of farm visits with these people in many cases, and then encourage them to start small and grow from there.
We will continue our conversation and take your gardening questions at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. It costs almost $12,000 a day to keep WVXU on the air, and you heard that right, $12,000 every day. Your contribution will help cover a part of that. We invite you to listen to 91.7 WVXU all year long, and right now we're asking you to help cover the cost of a small part of one day. Make that phone call to 513-419-7100. 7155. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to discuss homesteading and farming and to answer your gardening questions are Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm, and from the Campbell County Extension Office, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Sarah, what kind of response have you been getting to the classes on homesteading and starting a farm?
We have a great response. So far, we have about 50 folks signed up, and that's just easy to sign up by calling the Campbell County Extension Office, and we'll sign you up.
So it's a good response, a lot of interest in this
Absolutely.
Topic.
Absolutely, and as Don mentioned earlier, he's logged over the last 6 months or so, and I don't get as many as him, but I have logged quite a few, I'd say a dozen or more the last year, and people are very, very interested in this type of work.
Again, our horticulture panel is here today. They can answer your gardening questions. They can also answer questions about homesteading and farming. 513-419-7100. Don, I guess the question I have to ask is that gardening and this kind of thing, it's such a good hobby. And I just wonder if it's a good idea to take a hobby that you love and turn it into a business.
Very much so. In fact, a lot of the folks that may enter these programs may already have a hobby of gardening, for example, and this program here will actually allow them to begin to look at this and think about it and say, okay, am I prepared to increase production and manage this correctly in order to be a viable, you know, option for a revenue flow for the family, and that's part of the program for this.
My mother and father were both big gardeners when I was growing up. But my dad had an off-the-farm job, but then he lost that job when he was probably about 55, and my mother and him went into the market gardening and did market gardening for more than 20 years, and they used to sell in the Worthington Market in Columbus. So they did it, you know, so he did it as a second career, and I think if my mother was still willing to do it, my dad would still be doing it. He's 81, but my mom is not willing to do it anymore.
513-419-7100, and let's talk with Freddie in Pleasant Ridge. Hi, Freddie. Freddie, are you still with us? Okay, I guess we've lost Freddie. We want to talk, let's see here. Now, actually, we got a comment from Susie on the west side, question from Susie. She wants to know how to deal with stink bugs and Lazarus lizards that have taken over her garden.
I'm assuming that by stink bug, she's thinking of the marmorated stink bug, which has been a pest that has come into the Northern Kentucky area within the last 3 years. And it's a pest to our fruit trees. It's a pest to a lot of our vegetables, in particular tomatoes. But it also, as we call, is a house invader. At this time of year in the fall, cooler temperatures, it is finding its way inside our home. And it actually overwinters as an adult in our home. It doesn't complete its life cycle, so it's not laying eggs on the inside of your house. But it kind of finds the dark places in your house, undisturbed areas behind boxes. And then in the springtime, when the warm weather approaches, it will find its way back outside. And it doesn't need much to eat. It actually would just, you know, kind of go dormant, if you will. But if you've ever squashed one, or if you've ever taken your vacuum cleaner, which I do not recommend, because it smells like cilantro, you know, and it's not very pleasant, and it will stay in your vacuum cleaner. So I advise not to do that. So, but they are a pest. They have a sucking mouth part. So when they're feeding on our fruits and vegetables,
these are the ones that have a brown coloring, right? The marmorated, they're brown. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can get a little deeper into the biology, or I guess the looks of them compared to other stink bugs. But as a whole, they are pests to our fruits and vegetables. Now, there is a beneficial insect that looks like a stink bug. But if you're not sure, that's where you just want to call our office, send some pictures, and we can, you know, help you identify.
Is there something she can put in her garden to get rid of them?
honestly, what I do, if I see them either inside the home or in the garden, I have a bucket of soapy water and I just tap them in there, or I put them on the ground and I squash them myself. Again, this time of year, they're not really thriving outside because it is getting cooler in the evening. So they're finding their way through the cracks as you open your door in the morning and at night or throughout the day. If you have your front porch light on, they typically will find that warmth around the your front porch light. So, again, you can use organic products like horticulture soaps, but you have to spray directly on the insect.
And Susie also asked about Lazarus lizards. Any advice on dealing with those?
We don't have them at Turner Farm.
I think they're
kind of confined to one part of town.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have an issue, and to be honest, I haven't received a call about them. So I can definitely, help if you want to reach out to us. But I don't have an answer right now.
Yeah. What about lizards in general? Is there some way to keep them under control, or no?
Don, do you have any?
Don, do you have any advice?
I do not. I mean, obviously, they're often an urban situation around homes and rock gardens and things, and they can be a beneficial animal, but at the same time, obviously, large numbers can be a little bit more of a nuisance as well.
Again,
get with us. We can research it and get an answer for those. I know they're in Fort Thomas quite heavily in spots.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to ask a question of our gardening panel. Back on the idea of starting a small farm, homesteading, when you go into this, do you need to go into it with your eyes wide open?
Yeah, just, do you like to be outside all times of the year? Are you very inventive? Are you self-motivated? Because, you could possibly be the business mind, you could possibly be the engineer, you could be the marketing person. I think kind of our everything.
Yeah. We have some training programs at Turner Farm for people who think that they want to be small-scale farmers as a career. So we have paid internship programs. We have a veterans program that's for veterans that is a two-year, year-round program, paid program. And then we also have a program that runs from April 1st to October 31st. So if people think that they might want to try it out before they jump in for themselves, they can interview with Turner Farm. And if you go to our website, there's a page about it. And questions that we ask people when they inquire. And we do try to find those people in the winter months. So we interview those people in December, January, February. We hope to have them hired, know who we're going to have with us by the end of February. And then they start April 1st.
Don, as you were saying, it can be lucrative, but it's not necessarily an easy life.
It is. Obviously, folks who like the physical work in many cases like to work with their hands. This is very accommodating to them. It can be very good exercise. It can be very therapeutic. It can be a release from the day's stresses of our daytime job. So it can provide a lot of other health benefits other than just nutrition and as far as improved food source. But it's an all around can be a very enjoyable part of your day just to have something to go home to.
Got a question from a listener about who's noticed that there are a lot of farms that seem to be switching to growing wine grapes, and he's just wondering if that's a good idea for our area.
Well, actually, yeah, the other day I was on two visits with some Northern Kentucky vineyards, and yes, it is a great success. It will take 3 to 5 years for you actually to get your first crop, so you have to think about that, too. You just can't plant your
first... There's the planning thing again.
Yeah, and, a few farmers in particular, they have decided to keep their... daytime job, work when they can to get their farm started, and the future goal is to then retire from their day job and then keep, the winery. And You know, so that's something to think about too. Whereas our annual crops like tomatoes and pumpkins and things like that, you can get a return that year. Whereas, you know, if you're putting in fruit trees or, you know, vine crops like a perennial crop like grapes, you have to think in the future to make sure that you have quality and quantity to make a return for that.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Kathy in Oxford. Hi, Kathy. Hi, Kathy. We seem to be having a problem with our phone system right now. So if you have questions, email them to us, talk@wvxu.org, or you can tweet them to us or send them my Facebook. Again, a little bit of problem with the phone lines right now. We'll try back in just a moment here and see if we can get those working. So as far as starting into homesteading, or starting into small farming, what would be the very first step that you would take?
Well, Don, chime in as well, but I think, you know, getting an evaluation of your farm or your garden, doing a soil analysis, a soil report, understanding, you know, if you do want to do this economically, to make sure that you have some resources. So that would be my suggestion, the beginning steps. Of course, there are many more that you have to do. But Don or Melinda, any other suggestions right at the beginning?
Well, one of the things that we're doing, I guess, with the homesteading is we're talking about the agencies that are out there, the Extension Service, the Conservation District, you know, even the lawn and garden stores, making people aware of what opportunities are for to get resources and more knowledge and get some help. We also talk about funding sources, for example. And then we get into a list of things such as understanding the soil and the water resources you're looking at. And then we talk about the enterprises ranging from fruits and vegetables to a lot of the livestock enterprises that are out there. So we give people an idea of what opportunities there are out there and let their interests sort of stem at whatever direction they may want to go. And then we can help them with specific planning of different enterprises that they may have. So in many cases, it's just they want to, you know, have a small operation just for self-sufficiency there with a family unit. And if they have extra, then they can actually maybe have some revenue from that. So. But these programs start, I don't know if we talk about, need to talk about the date, they start, we kick these off at the Campbell County Environmental Education Center on October the 4th at 6:30 p.m. So we bring everybody together, we explain the programs and kick that off, and then folks can take the homesteading series, which is a total of 9 classes, or we can take the Farm Start, which is a total of 9 classes. And there'll be Tuesday nights will be the homesteading classes, and Thursday nights will be the Farm Start. Farm Start's more of a farm business enterprise program.
We had a question from Kathy. She wants to know about weed control without using Roundup. Now, she says she's tried vinegar. She wants to know what she can use besides pulling them because she doesn't want to kill the bees.
There are a few options. Depending upon what type of weed you have, that would be my first recommendation, is to identify what type of weed. So I'll just generalize some of our broadleaf weeds. You know, you can use the black plastic method, trying to smother them out. You can torch them. I would advise, you know, getting, you know, permission from the local fire department and understanding when to torch and how to torch. So those are some of my quick suggestions for, you know, some of our home gardeners, if you will, on a smaller scale.
There are some organic herbicides now that are listed for organic agriculture, and I actually have not used them. And one of them is called, you can use corn gluten, and it is a byproduct. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I actually use that in our vegetable garden. I haven't seen much difference.
Okay, so you didn't notice any?
I didn't. So I've been doing that consecutively for this growing season, and I haven't seen a reduction in weed population. So I don't know. I followed the label, and it is a preventative, so meaning, or a pre-emergent, so meaning that it's not going to, it's not a post-emergent herbicide. You have to put it down before the weed seeds germinate.
And then you would have to not use it on something you're putting seeds in the ground. You'd have to use it for something that you're setting plants out.
Exactly. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I have incorporated that into our vegetable production management, but I haven't seen much of a reduction. But to be honest, with this spring and summer, with all the rain that we've had, it's been a little challenging.
You know, at Turner Farm, we're certified organic. So our biggest problem is weeds, because we can't use herbicides or most herbicides. So it's the biggest problem that we have. And I'd say if you've got the time and if you can stay on top of it, your best bet is just to get after them when they're young and cultivate. And that means to just disturb the soil a little bit on the top. And, you know, maybe you can use a hoe, a long-handled hoe, when the weeds are really, really small, or a wheel hoe, the old-fashioned ones that some people use as lawn ornaments, but you can get, there's a newer version that has a wheel in the front and then has almost like a stirrup hoe in back. And I did that just 2 days ago and ran through a new bed of radishes that we have coming up. So hopefully, you know, like if you really can stay ahead of it. And the thing is, you want to really, if you're using a hoe, you want to really, really scuffle up the soil and create what they call a dust mulch on top of the soil, so that you break the capillary action of the moisture wicking up, and then there won't be any moisture there in the very surface for new little seedlings to germinate. But it's tough. It's tough to stay ahead of the weeds. And I like using a rototiller, a walk-behind rototiller, for in between rows or in walkways, just to kill the weeds that you don't want there.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us by emailing talk@wvxu.org or by finding us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. It only takes about 3 minutes to do your part to help pay for Morning Edition, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Car Talk. When you call, a volunteer will ask you for your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. And it's as easy as that. A contribution of $120 works out to about 33 cents a day. So please take a moment right now, make that phone call to 513-419-7155, or you can give online at wvxu.org or wmub.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Joining us to discuss homesteading and farming and to answer your gardening questions, Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm, and from the Campbell County Extension Office, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell. We aren't able to take your phone calls this afternoon. You can still join us with your questions, though, by emailing talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We had a question from Jeanette in Westchester. She's a flower grower, and she wants to know if you know of any new types of plants that can stand the hot temperatures and the long periods of dry that we get around here.
Well, depending upon what she's wanting them for, but I would start by saying in the landscape, you want to go with drought tolerance, such as some of our native plants. Definitely starting there. And if you need resources on that, your extension office will be glad to share that. And also, a lot of our succulents and sedums definitely is able to tolerate rocky soils, compacted soils like we have here, and definitely drought tolerant. So that would be a few of my recommendations. Not only are herbaceous pretty flowers, but there are trees that can tolerate these conditions as well. And if you need any help or information, that's where the Extension Office and Turner Farm. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I raise flowers and sell flowers at the farmer's market, and I rarely ever water any of the flowers just because it's where the space is and the amount of space. So my zinnias are just fine. Cosmos, Celosia. There are so many flowers that are just perfect, you know, without any moisture or anything. So, yep.
Now, we had a question from Peter. He wants to know about aquaponics in an urban setting, and if that's worth getting into. What, first off, what's aquaponics? And then, is it worth getting into in an urban setting?
So, aqua is, of course, water. So, we're thinking about growing plant material in a system with a soilless system, and then incorporating fish into that system to use them as fertilizer. So there's multiple different type or multiple different levels, if you will, of this system. And urbanization is a very great way to utilize some of our old buildings. I've been to Detroit, Michigan, for example, and Chicago, Illinois, to see these systems. And our sister land-grant university, Kentucky State University, is the lead researcher in Kentucky for aquaponics. So if you're interested, they have programs, and you can go tour there. There are a few farmers I know in Campbell County that have hydroponic greenhouses that are growing some vegetables. So it's definitely a system, but you have to think about, too, because this system's running all year round. So it can be your utilities can be quite expensive because you have to run tanks and you have to run lights all year round if it's in a building or even if it's in a greenhouse. So you have to think about those.
But are we talking
well.
A large initial investment in equipment and space?
Yeah, yeah. So I would do some research on that. Yeah, so your cost up front, I think, would definitely be that. And then you had to look at your returns. I know microgreens are a big product that are grown in hydroponic systems. Of course, our tomatoes, leafy greens are grown in those systems.
What about the benefits of aquaponics?
I don't know that off the top of my head. I know, you know, you can grow all year round. You can get a quicker product because, you know, you have your lights on for a very long period of time. It's a controlled system. So, you know, again, depending, I've only seen, like I said, microgreens and tomatoes and our lettuces or cool season crops grown in those types of systems. So as far as pricing, I'm not really sure on that. That would be a question that I am happy to answer and get those data and those values for you. But right now, I don't know those figures.
Again, if you'd like to join us, you can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can send us a tweet or post something on Facebook to get a question or comment to us. And Steve sent us a question. He has a compost bin that's invaded by larva-type worms. He says it makes it smell like an outhouse. And he's added dirt. He's moved it to another part of the yard, but the pests keep coming back. So anybody have any thoughts as to what these might be and how he can get rid of them?
Well, it seems like it needs to be turned a little bit. So when you start smelling, there needs to be some anaerobic activity. So, I would suggest turning it 2 to 3 times a week. We actually, at the Extension Office on October 5th, we have a class all about beginning composting. And you need to have equal levels of your greens and your browns. So we call it like lasagna layering. So you want to make sure you have equal parts of those so it really cooks, if you will, and you don't have those stenches and certain. But keep in mind, too, that you need beneficial bacteria. You need beneficial worms to help break down on the materials that you put in your compost.
Any idea what the worms in the compost might be, though?
The worms are beneficial.
So nothing to really.
But if it's not a worm, it could be, you know, other like a centipede, which thrive on broken down materials, decaying materials. So just because you see insects doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad sign. It could be that you've created the habitat for them to help break down those materials. So send pictures if you can, because that would be helpful. If it is a pest that you need to try to, that we need to get out of there, then that's when we can recommend something. But I wouldn't just automatically assume it's a bad pest if you see something in there.
Melinda, any thoughts?
Oh, no. No. Yeah, I was thinking, well, centipedes, those are good good guys. Yeah.
Now, we had Rick in Highland County. We were talking earlier about evaluating your farm. And Rick in Highland County, his comment, he has a small farm. And he said he had a local excavator come out first to take soil samples to check for clay content and soil quality.
Well, the Extension Office, we offer to Campbell County residents free soil testing. You can get it's a routine soil test, which gives you soil, pH, and your macronutrients. And then we also can get you information about your soil type. So, Don, are we having that discussion during the beginning of these classes, talking about that and those resources?
Yes. Matter of fact, we're looking very closely at that. When we're looking at the land resources, we will basically look at, what soil type you have, descriptions of that soil type. We'll be looking at depth of soil. We'll have a little short soil class here, too. But we will be giving people that attend our class an aerial photograph of their farm, as well as topography and soil data on their individual tracts of land. So those are extremely important as folks begin to develop and look at opportunities.
Yeah, and there is a free website you can go on. It's NRCS has a soil data, and you can put in your property address and really, find out more information about your soil. And that's what Don was talking about, the topography and more soil information that you have. But again, like I mentioned earlier, going to the vineyards this week, I took some soil samples, and it's a 2-week return, free service. I go out there and collect, and then that gives information of how much nutrients you need to put back into your soil prior to planting your crop.
Hey, we had a question from Matthew in Clifton. He wonders if you have any suggestions for grapes he can grow that are edible. He says the previous owners of his property planted ornamental grapes.
Depending upon, you have your table grapes if you just want to put that on an arbor. If you're wanting to get in the wine making, there's many different varieties that are suitable for Kentucky the Northern Kentucky area. Vinifera, for example, is a very nice wine, grape wine. So, again, depending upon what you're wanting to do with it, you have your white wines, you have your red wines, and then your table grapes. So if you know what you want, give me a call and I can give you resources and varieties. You have to mail order them. I have not seen locally anywhere where you can buy these starter plants.
And you'd have to have a trellis to grow these, right?
Oh, yeah. Grapes like to climb. So you'll have to have some trellis system. And depending upon your land, depending upon the quantity that you want, your trellis system, could be as small or as large as, I guess, you're wanting to do. All those types of designs, questions on variety selection. And then maybe you have the land and you just want to grow them, but possibly, sell them. Then I think this homestead program would be very beneficial because if you're in the winemaking, we have local wineries that want to buy grapes, or you sell table grapes at the local farmers market, or become part of a CSA. So I think there's definitely opportunity, but remember that this is not going to be a crop that's going to give you a return in year one. It's going to look at year three or year five.
Like you were saying earlier, yes, mm-hmm. this is a long-term project.
Yep, absolutely.
Today's the first day of fall, isn't it?
Yes, how exciting, and it's 90 degrees outside.
So I'm wondering, advice and tips for people on fall gardening. What comes to mind here, Melinda?
Well, if you want to get something going, you got to get it going pretty soon before the end of September, so you can still put a few lettuce, spinach, those types of things in the ground, but you're almost running out of time. And I'm actually worried about my lettuce and spinach today with it being this hot. I would like to be back at the farm making sure it's being sprinkled just to keep the temperature down.
Yeah, does the fact that the hot weather's gone so far into summer and then into the beginning of fall, does that change your plans as to what you plant and how you handle things?
Well, it's it makes it difficult to get your fall crops in because most of the fall things that we grow in the fall are cool season things, and makes it very difficult for the lettuce and spinach to germinate when it's warm like this. And in fact, we didn't get very good. A month ago, when we put lettuce seeds in the ground, we got terrible germination. So we're having to redo some of that, and also the spinach.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a few resources that we recommend, and I know that you do it at Turner Farm, is using shade cloths to prevent that direct sunlight exposure to the foliage of things. You can try that, or if it's getting in the cooler season, then using low tunnels to extend your growing season to prevent any frost injury on your cool season crops.
And it's actually supposed to be cooler next week, so it actually, if you wanted to plant some lettuce or spinach, I would recommend waiting till next week. And mm-hmm. I think it's supposed to be down in the 50s at night, so we might be easier to get those things to germinate. But radishes would be okay even in the heat. You could go ahead and get them started. So,
and carrots, you're a little too late, but that's another crop that can tolerate a little bit more heat, if you will, in the fall compared to our leafy greens.
Yeah. And the floating row covers are just wonderful mm-hmm. for your fall crop. So we don't need them right now because it's so warm, but in a month or two, maybe we'll need the floating row covers, and you can keep your crops going longer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're done with your gardening for the year, say, heck with it, I'm mm-hmm. finished. I guess it's a good time of year to start planning ahead, isn't it?
Right.
Absolutely.
And you could also put down some cover crops. You don't really want to go into the winter with your soil bare. So either get some organic matter down, like your shredded leaves, or plant a cover crop.
Don, Sarah, and Melinda, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
No problem.
Thank you, sir.
Melinda O'Brien, Adult Education Director at Turner Farm, and from the Campbell County Extension Office, Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Agriculture Agent Don Sorrell. There are quite a few gardening and farming events coming up in the next several weeks, and you can find a link to more information at WVXU.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. Each Friday on Cincinnati Edition, local editors and reporters join us for a look at the events, people, and organizations affecting our region and to analyze the stories behind the headlines. And we invite you to ask questions and share your opinions about the latest news in the tri-state and how it was covered by the local media. That's our weekly news review on the next Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.